Welcome everyone to this week's episode on Inquisitor's Odyssey. We're your hosts, Sam
and Tawanda.
So last week we talked about the benefits of being a healthy skeptic and how that could be beneficial to your life. But we did note that it has the potential to be unhealthy when taken too far. So how can one take skepticism too far?
Okay, so have you ever met a kid who's always asking you why, right? And they keep asking you why and keeps going until you reach a point where there really isn't an answer to that question. And most of the time, as an adult, you might not want to admit to this child that you don't really know the answer. So you just end up saying, because I say so, or something like that. And this can be a way that you can take skepticism too far if you keep asking and you keep going with the questions until you doubt everything.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's a really good example because I remember even in high school, middle school, I used to wonder how the question why never ends. There's no end to the question why. You can literally go asking why and why and why to the point where you say, well, I don't know. But as you said, for some people, it could be hard for them to say, I don't know. It could be like a personal issue, I suppose. But yeah, if you keep asking why all the time, it gets to a point where can't really reason with anything, because in the end you just don't know the base of it. Like you just think that everything is unknown.
Yeah, and I think the question why is so important, because this is the question that drives our actions. You're not gonna do something for no reason at all. There has to be a why that's driving your actions. And I think if we can't figure out why, or we keep asking questions until we reach a point where we can't find an answer to those questions, then it becomes really hard for us to act. Because you can imagine someone becoming paralyzed from overthinking, like you're incapable of making any decisions.
I think that's one of the biggest problem with taking skepticism too far. It's that indecisiveness that you have, because you just get to a point where you don't know what to believe, because you keep questioning if is this actually true or not. And you also couple that with asking why all the time, then you kind of get to a point where, as I said before, you basically don't believe anything, and it becomes hard for you to navigate your life when you're thinking all the time that I don't know this, I don't know that, I don't know this, I don't know that. And I guess that's kind of not a good way to live.
You touched on an important point there, because I feel like in some way, if we realize how little we know about everything, it can make it really hard to be able to do anything. You never know how anything is gonna turn out, and you could spend hours questioning everything. Let's say you want to make a decision and you consider every single option that you have, and you try to imagine how that could end, and you ask your question. You don't just accept, let's say someone tells you this is the option that you should take, and you don't just accept that. You know, you actually go through that process of examining it. And do you think that it's possible that if you take that too far, it's possible to actually reach a point where you realize that you know so little about the potential outcomes that you actually can't make a decision?
Yeah, I agree with that, and I really don't know what to do about that, because that could be applicable in so many decisions. Like basically all the decisions that you have to make in your life, you can only know so much before you actually have to decide. And I think it's much better to actually make a decision with what you've got than always thinking that you just don't have enough information, because maybe you'll never have enough information to make the best decision. Because it's kind of like the idea where when you're trying to start something new, maybe you're trying to start a new habit, or you're trying to start a new business, or you know, something that's new, when you're venturing out to try something new, you always feel like you need to wait, or you need to get things prepared, like you just need some auxiliary things before you actually get to start. But if you listen to any advice that somebody who has made it in that field that you're trying to pursue, or person that has experience in that field, they always tell you just start it. If you just start and you can adapt and work with the information you've got, instead of just only waiting until you find everything that you need to actually start it out perfectly. And I don't think that's a good idea. What do you think?
Yeah, so I have this idea that it might be possible that there's a part of our brain that's evolved to be able to make decisions with very little information. If we dwell on the fact that if we focus on how little we know about whatever it is, let's say you want to start a business and you start to ask yourself questions about how much you know about that particular industry or what could happen if you make certain decisions, you might get to a point where you recognize how little information you actually have. Whichever path you might decide to take, you don't really know how that's going to turn out. So in some way, it feels like either our brains can fill in those gaps and give us this illusion of knowledge when we don't really know, or our brain is evolved to be able to act even based on very little knowledge. I don't know what you think on that.
I think I agree with you in a lot of points there, and that whole aspect of having to fill the gap or having to give us this illusion of knowledge, I feel like that's what drives our need to always answer questions, and that's where the uncomfortableness to unanswered questions come from, because we always want to fill in the gaps and give us the best tools in order to thrive and not just doubt ourselves. So yeah, I completely agree with you there.
So here's an observation that I've made, and I'm not sure if it's universal or it might just be a few limited cases that I've noticed, but it kind of seems like the example that I gave at first, right, of that child who just asks why a lot. And then I feel like we gravitate as we grow older. We move to the far end of that spectrum, the opposite end, where we stop asking questions and it becomes easier or safer to go with whatever is working for everyone else. And in a lot of situations in our social life, we want everything to be answered. We don't trust anyone who comes along and asks too many questions, but it shakes up that bubble that you're in, that safe space where you say, because we kind of derive our certainty from our societal norms. So if I'm feeling that this is the way that my parents did this, my grandparents did this, my great-great-grandparents did this the same way, and I derive my certainty from knowing that this has worked for them, so it should work for me. And then when someone comes along and they start to ask you questions and say, well, why is it that it has to be this way? I feel like that shakes up our world so much that there's a part of us that closes off, and now we don't want to consider anything else, because the thing with doubt is you can go to the point where you start to doubt your own existence or senses, right? Because you can have illusions and everything. Then you reach a point where you can even start to doubt your own existence.
Yeah, that's a really good observation, and I would think that, I wouldn't say it's universal, but depending on the person and I guess the generation, that could really apply to a lot of people. And I agree that we sometimes look up on our social circle or our society to validate our thoughts, because there's a reason why everybody says, well, that's what everybody does, or that's what works for everyone, or that's widely accepted, because we kind of see that it works for everybody else, so we don't really question what's behind or if there's anything better that could replace those thoughts that we have. And just considering how hard it is to burst that bubble and actually make yourself question whatever is around you, I would say that it's a slippery slope for some people once they get out of the bubble, once they start doubting things, for them to continuously doubt every new information that comes to them. Because I suppose doubting or truly questioning what they're getting or truly questioning that new information, it's kind of new to them per se. So once they've overcome that safe space of just accepting whatever is handed to them through generations and through affirmations in the society, I think it can be difficult for some people to know when to work with the information they've got instead of continuing to question and question. Just like that little boy you mentioned before, just keep on asking why. So yeah, I think I would agree with you on that.
Okay, so with this dimension of taking skepticism too far, there wouldn't really be any problem with continuously asking questions as long as you are cool with finding out that some of those questions don't have answers. So a question that we would be asking ourselves in this context is, do all questions have to have answers? Because I don't really see a problem with asking questions about not just our day-to-day lives, but the nature of our reality. I don't see a problem with asking those questions as long as you're willing to contend with the fact that you might not get answers, or the answers might, well, they might not be what you like. I guess for you to be asking questions, you have to also ask yourself if what you're asking is even a coherent question. If I asked you what's north of the North Pole, that's a question that doesn't make sense, and yet it may appear like you're being skeptical, but probably doesn't make sense as a question.
Yeah, I think you should also kind of check your question, and also, as you said, come to terms that continuously asking why or continuously asking questions could lead you to answers that you might not agree with, or lead you to no answer at all. And once you've come to terms with that, I think it would be up to every individual to gauge the answers that they get and see which path makes more sense to them. So I don't really think there's a clear line that you can draw for everyone to follow, where you say if you take your skepticism beyond this point, then it has become unhealthy or it will have negative consequences in your life. So it's very tricky, and it's not at all out of this world that there are people that come up with conspiracy theories or just don't seem to believe all the facts that you throw at them, because there is no clear line, in my opinion. I'm not sure what you think.
Yeah, with conspiracy theories, that can be an example of someone taking their skepticism too far. And with conspiracy theories, especially with grand conspiracy kind of conspiracy theories, where someone imagines that there's a secret organization, you know, the Illuminati, that's running everything, it leads to this excessive doubt where you start to say, if someone comes along trying to give you evidence for why your conspiratorial worldview might be incorrect, and you just see all of that as part of this sham that's being upheld by whatever this secret organization is. In that sense, you reach a point where you have these questions that really can't be answered, or you can't put an end to the skepticism, because any response to your doubt can be countered by saying, this is what they want you to believe, they in quotes.
Yeah, one of the things that is important to understand about a conspiracy theories, I think, is that it is more emotionally driven than factually driven. So you can really notice that the people that are coming up with these conspiracy theories already have a conclusion before they have all the information that they think they need. So any new information that you have either supports the conclusion that they already made, or is just another lie. So when you're dealing with conspiracy theories, I think it's important to understand that in order to get your point across, you have to realize that these people are emotionally driven.
Okay, so I get what you mean in that context of there's always an emotional aspect to a lot of these conspiracy theories, but I also feel like a lot of these people are actually thinking rationally and they're coming to a rational conclusion. And I've always had this notion that sometimes when people gravitate towards conspiracy theories, it's because they sense that there might be a lie there, or there's something there that they're not being told, and then they try to fill up the gaps on their own. And I guess the problem happens when they give this impression of being skeptical and asking questions, when in reality they've already come to a conclusion and they're just trying to find the evidence that will support whatever it is that they already believe.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't think of them as irrational thinkers, but it comes from their mistrust of something that as a society we have thought as maybe a source of information or a body of information that is quite trustworthy. So let's say even about flat earth, or people that I would say that would think of them as flat earthers, I think that stems from a mistrust of, say, NASA, some information source that as a society or as a country, I suppose, or as people have decided to label them as a trustworthy organization. So it's very natural to question the source. And people can't per se question the data because they don't have access to the raw data that they get. So I feel like it comes from a mistrust of the source instead of the facts, because they don't interact directly with the process of retrieving those facts. They only get the facts from somewhere else or someplace that we have decided to generally just trust.
So for most conspiracy theorists, the problem is bridging that gap between trusting the scientific method and the scientific community and whatever information they give you, while still trying to be skeptical and not accepting. Because I think the whole idea of the Enlightenment and scientific rationality was you're trying to find a method of finding answers that is always questioning whatever assumptions or whatever is already there. And yeah, sometimes scientists can fall into dogmatic kind of thinking, because that's a human trait when we struggle with embracing new ideas. And so this becomes a problem, because once someone who's outside of that scientific framework gets this notion that, first of all, scientists can be wrong, which is true, but also that scientists can be biased, and it never helps. There have been a lot of instances, for example, I think it was the issue with cigarettes historically, even the effects of mercury on child development. And there were a lot of cases where you had scientists who were coming up and opposing, or at least providing opposing data. Even right now with climate change, they are, even though it's a very small percentage of scientists who are saying we are not certain yet about whether or not this thing is really happening. And that gives fuel to those people who are climate change deniers, and they already have a conclusion. And I think that's always the biggest problem, which is that you find that someone has a conclusion that they already have, and then they work backwards from their conclusion, trying to find whatever evidence they can to support their theory. And that happens a lot with these conspiracy theories, because someone is saying, most of these people, they're very skeptical people, you know, they're thinking rationally, they're being skeptical, they're doing it the right way, but in some way even the questions that they're asking are influenced by the fact that they're trying to get a certain conclusion.
Yeah, and I think one of the best ways to figure out who to believe, ideally, would be to see what the source of the information has to gain in giving you that information, or in letting people believe in the information that they're setting out there. So, for example, with the climate change, if automobile companies are releasing these articles about climate change not being true, you have to stop and question, why would they say that? As opposed to people that are maybe genuinely concerned with the environment, that have nothing to gain from being aware of that information. If you question and say, what do they have to gain from informing people that the climate is changing and who knows, we might die in the next 100 years. If they don't have anything to gain, then I would think that it should take you at least one step forward into believing them.
Or maybe just into hearing more of what they have to say.
Yeah, exactly. At least looking further into what they have to say. Not maybe just believing them and just accepting the information that they have. Because obviously, you're being skeptical and you're trying to see your options and the thing that you want to believe. So I guess that would just give you the basis on which to focus your attention on.
But in some sense, don't you feel like there's this recent development of this hostility towards being overly skeptical? I've seen, especially on social media with cancel culture and everything, if something happens, a celebrity is accused of racism or something, and someone else comes along and they just ask. Obviously, there are those people who are asking not to be skeptical, but to be cynical. But there can be someone who can reasonably come along and say, why should we believe this? Or where's the evidence? Or did this person really do this? And usually when someone comes along and they're asking all of these questions, right, people immediately see this person as being part of the problem. Like, I've heard that term tossed around a lot, which is the backbone of our justice system, is if someone is accused of something, we're not just going to accept that immediately. We're going to ask questions. And in some way, people don't really want that anymore, because the moment you start to ask too many questions, it's you're interfering with this mob justice that they are trying to deliver.
Yeah, I was just about to use that word as well. I'm starting to realize this whole mob mentality when it comes to people on social media that share the same kind of opinions. And yeah, I completely agree. We've kind of dismissed the idea of due process. They just want to attack now and ask questions later, when in all cases it should be ask questions and then attack if needed. And same, I've been hearing all this "you're part of the problem" phrase thrown out everywhere, and I think that's a really naive way to kind of dismiss what the other person has to say without considering the content of their point or the point that they're trying to get across. So I completely agree when you say that nowadays more and more people gravitate towards quote-unquote canceling the person before actually asking, is it actually true? And I think that's kind of a dangerous game to play.
Yeah, actually, in that context, I feel like the boundary of what's considered to be reasonable skepticism is shrinking, because we're gravitating towards this point where asking certain questions, you're either a bigot or you're racist or you're part of the problem, right? As long as you're asking certain questions, which sometimes are very reasonable questions to want to ask, because it's the only way we can get a better level of understanding about the world around us, right? We have to be free to ask questions, because if you look back historically, the great questions that have been asked that have moved the human race forward have always been questions that made people uncomfortable. I'm pretty sure at some point someone came along and said, but is it right though for us to actually own other people, right? To own another human being, is this right? And it may have been completely scandalous for you to ask that, but it's the big questions that move the human race forward. And I feel like we might end up reaching a point where we stagnate, because we've shrunk the border of what it means to take skepticism too far, so small that you really can't ask any game-changing questions without potentially stepping on some toes.
Yeah, and exactly, to see so much hate and negative thoughts being hurled towards somebody who is asking such a simple question that you would consider to be part of the due process and prosecuting someone for something they've done, I could really see how even questions that, as you said, might move the human race forward would become outrageous in this generation that it would have been back then. And I think even back then or now, and even in the future, asking questions, asking hard questions, is gonna step on toes regardless. So I think we should all be more concerned about our questions going unanswered instead of the toes that we will inevitably step on, because obviously it is apparent, and it has always been apparent, that you can't please everyone. And I think it's more concerning that our questions will go unanswered than stepping on a few toes. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you there, actually. I think it becomes a genuine problem, especially if we find ourselves in a situation where we can't even ask those questions. And you notice it most in today's world, especially, I could say, with something like the Me Too movement, right? And I do respect that process of trying to weed out these very bad people that have inserted themselves into position of power and are using those positions to take advantage of women. But it does become concerning when the simple act of asking questions about that online elicits this very violent or aggressive response to say you asking those questions makes you part of the problem, especially in a lot of these cases where you have a crime that was committed 20-30 years ago, right? Well, allegedly. And that's what our justice system is founded on, proportioning your belief to the evidence that's provided. And while that does allow for some people to get away with crimes when we don't have evidence, the alternative, which is punishing people even with no evidence, might be way worse, in my opinion. And I think, especially when you consider all of these discoveries that have been made in psychology and cognitive science that show that our memories aren't as perfect as we think they are, it's very easy to use suggestion to implant memories into people, Inception style. And I think a well-known example of that is the Mandela effect. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, which is entire groups of people remembering certain things differently. And I think that should be enough to just give us pause before turning into a mob. You first listen, you hear, you analyze the evidence that's been provided, and allowing those questions to be asked in a respectful way doesn't mean you're betraying the cause. It's allowing the process to take its natural course.
So that's a really tough one, because if you're having doubts about your own recollection, then I would think the first thing you'd think of doing is just getting a second opinion, asking somebody who was there with you when you had those memories, let's say, when you had that experience. But then, as you mentioned, the Mandela effect, it could be that even you and the people around you could have that same false recollection. So I think it's pretty hard. Yeah, it's pretty damn hard to actually know what is true and what is not. And it seems like I'm not quite well equipped to give you a definite answer on what exactly I would do if I was in that position. But I guess there would have to be something that would make you doubt your own recollection. But for the most part, I think most people, and even myself, would find it very hard to instantly doubt our recollection. Unless, of course, even in our recollection, we think that there's something missing, which in this case, I think the best thing to do is have somebody else fill in the gaps for you. But it's also recommended that you take into consideration the Mandela effect. So I guess the best, or let's say the ideal way to go about it, is ask as many people as you can to gather the best information possible. Yeah, I think that's what I would do.
I do agree that if there can be this kind of doubt about our own memories, then yeah, that's a pretty difficult thing to deal with. But so I'm gonna play the role of the radical skeptic. And so obviously, you know that effect when you put a spoon in a glass filled with water and it looks bent, and you know it's a straight spoon or a straw or whatever, and that effect is because of light refraction. And it kind of makes me think, if our eyes can be fooled that easily, right, by something that simple, then it would not be completely unreasonable for someone who's a radical skeptic to say they have doubts about even what our senses receive.
I think, building on that analogy you gave about light refraction, the person that first questioned what was going on with the spoon when it entered the water and it looked like the spoon was bent or broken, I think that person had the advantage of having the full picture before observing it in a different light. That is to say, the person knew that the spoon was straight for sure before actually inserting it into the water or observing it while it's in the water to notice that there has been a change in the original form. So as a skeptic, when you're searching for answers, and the first thing that you look at is the glass of water and the spoon inside it, your base or your original fact is that the spoon is bent. So it can be hard to doubt that and ask, is there more? What is the spoon actually like? Because you wouldn't even think of asking further questions because you don't know that there's anything more to ask, because you have observed with your eyes that the spoon is broken or the spoon is bent. So I agree, it can be really hard when you don't have the full picture to just accept what your senses have observed. So I definitely agree that your senses aren't the most reliable ways to gather information. You need to be able to ask more questions, but I would imagine that would be very hard to do since we have trusted our senses for all our lives, basically. We have depended on them, and we are still dependent on them to navigate this world. So it can be hard to have that reflex to instantly question our senses when we observe something. And I would say that's pretty hard as well, because then you're questioning something that you always thought was reliable. So at this point, what's stopping you from questioning anything, right? So I don't think it's unnatural at all to take the skepticism too far when you can't even trust your senses in cases like these. So it can be really hard to draw the line between healthy skepticism and unhealthy skepticism.
Yeah, I think what's worrying for most people, like in both of these cases that we just mentioned, where you start to doubt your memories and also your own senses, that's the basic framework of how we get to form our picture, our understanding of reality. And the moment you start to question those basic fundamental aspects of our reality, then you might start to struggle. I've seen people suffering from real existential dread because you start to ask yourself, what do I know about life, about reality, about me being down here on earth on this flying rock that is hurtling through space at crazy speeds? And all of that is just, you don't want to dwell too much on those questions because you get dizzy. I get dizzy just thinking about that. And yeah, I know people who suffer from that kind of existential dread where you ask yourself, okay, for so long in the history of humanity, we didn't know about infrared or gamma rays or x-rays. There was a whole piece of the electromagnetic spectrum that we had no access to, right? And there are frequencies that we can't hear. And it's like, you know that there's a part of your own reality that you can't see or hear. And all of that is just, when you start to really ask those questions, maybe sometimes it's entertaining when you go into those questions and you actually start to contemplate about your very existence. But then I don't think we're well equipped for handling those questions. I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, that's a hard position to be in, and I can really understand those people that would be experiencing that existential dread because of the sheer amount of uncertainty that we experience in our everyday lives. And obviously there's a reason why people say that ignorance is bliss, but that comes with accepting the fact that we're not going to answer every question, and that's okay. And in this case, I think it would be beneficial to apply that to depending on how far you've gone down the why rabbit hole, the things that you are most worried about but don't have any answers to. And it's not an easy thing living your whole life knowing that what you're experiencing and what you know now is not actually completely true, because upon new information, your whole reality could be flipped upside down. And even when it comes to scientific studies and the information that we get through research, it's not final, and we always know that things could change upon new information. And I think it's a very good way to live, being skeptical and asking questions and adapting upon new information. But it's also important to know and not always hold on to or always stick to that one information we have because we know that it could change. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, I actually think you're right about that, because in some sense we try to maintain our picture of reality because it gives us a sense of security when we're not really thinking of the fact that our whole worldview can just be flipped right upside down. And yeah, it keeps us in this position where we don't ask questions because we kind of recognize that the other extreme end would involve asking too many questions. And when we ask too many questions, we're gonna expect answers. I don't think people ask questions and without expecting answers, and that always brings us to the whole question of, can all questions have answers? And you probably find that they don't, and not everything has an answer or an explanation, right? I could use the example of how when this current outbreak started, there was a whole period when people were so convinced that this was all a plan by the world's wealthy people. I remember Bill Gates' name popping up there, and there was also the conspiracy theory about it being caused by 5G. It was comforting to people to find some sort of order in the chaos. The alternative means just accepting that our world is this unpredictable. I think that kind of ties into that existential dread that you feel when you ask too many questions and then you realize that there's so much uncertainty, and we tend to gravitate towards conspiracy theories because they give us something firm that we can stand on and they help us explain our everyday existence.
Yeah, I think it's not hard at all to see why it would be attractive for a lot of people to hold those theories that give them a ground to stand on. But I'm noticing that conspiracy theories pop up a lot in our conversations about skepticism, and I feel like it would be a topic that would deserve its own episode. What do you think?
Yeah, in the context of skepticism, it's obvious that conspiracy theories would come up because I think conspiracy theorists are the ultimate skeptics, even though in some cases they do take it too far and it becomes more of cynicism, because it's that kind of skepticism where you can't really find an answer. But I do agree with you that this is a topic that should stand alone.
Yeah, I think this is a perfect topic to explore in our future episodes.
So, that's all, folks. If you've made it this far, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Be sure to follow us on our Instagram and Twitter to keep up to date with everything related to the show. And make sure you subscribe on whatever platform you get your podcast from so that you're notified when there's a new episode.